Good morning, travelers and diners, and good morning, Rapido.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you this fine morning?
Fine. We just had a lot of fun, didn't we?
We did, and we're just nicely recovering from a very hectic weekend in New York, but one that was a whole
and
lot
a very
of fun.
Hot one.
Yeah. It was 98 degrees outside, but that was all right because we were mostly inside, except for our sojourn at the Big Apple
barbecue
block party.
But let's get to the reason we were in New York for this weekend was the big ta-ta James Beard Awards, which is the Oscars of the food world. And we started off with the that was a really nice party too, wasn't it?
The chef's night out party on Friday was very nice. We met lots of old friends there. Of course, met lots of old friends at the Sunday evening event, which is the Beard Awards itself and the party afterwards. And we were smart enough to avoid the after parties, which we read in various places, went on to.
There were three of them.
I think it was beyond the wee hours of the morning.
There was the after party, then there was the after-after party, and then there was the after-after-after party.
And everybody was celebrating. We saw our old friend Farmer Jones from Ohio. Heading off to the after party at Danielle, even though he had a 6 o'clock flight the next morning, and it was well after 11 o'clock when he was doing that, so he must be made of sterner stuff than we are.
I think so. But anyhow, it's a very elegant affair. It's black tie. It's an amazing $450 a ticket, to tell you the truth. I mean, we were there in the press room, so we weren't buying $450 tickets. But people still turn out. I mean, I guess this is the one event you're going to go to if you're going to go to any event. And now that they've moved it to Avery Fisher Hall out of that hotel where we used to, the ballroom where we used to have it, it's now a real red carpet event.
And there's also a little bit more room, although I have to say that it's a congested affair. It's a good job you like everybody. Otherwise nobody would manage to get along if they didn't all get along, if you know what I mean.
And especially the press room. If you hear, as we play the interviews that we recorded there, a lot of noise in the background. It's because it gets very frantic in the press room. It's the only place where you can get champagne before the award ceremony, so everybody's there.
Well, not everybody. They said they were reducing the number of people coming through, and I think it was a little better organized.
I thought it was a little better.
Yeah, nobody stole our table this year. Nobody stole our seats this year.
Did you see that woman, the broadcaster, in the strapless mini peacock dress?
certainly caught everybody's attention. What she was almost wearing. But what better place to start with the awards than with Mitchell Davis, who is a renowned author and chef in his own right, but happens to be vice president of everything at the James Beard organization. So we asked him during the course of the evening if he just wouldn't explain to us what, in his view, the James Beard Awards were all about. And I think he did a really good job. Don't you think so?
Yes. Let's listen.
So let's listen to what he had to say.
Now, we've been talking to all these award winners, the James Beard Award winners. We've also talked to Mitchell Davis, who's vice president in charge of the whole world with the Beard Foundation, but about his book, which is
Kitchen Sense.
But now I wanted him to come into this conversation and say, like, the beards, in your perspective, from your point of view, the beards represent what?
I think they represent the highest recognition that people who work really hard in the kitchen and in restaurants and who don't get a lot of attention can get from their peers. I mean, one of the reasons I think it becomes so coveted by people working in the industry is because the judging committee of the Restaurant and Chef Awards are restaurant owners and chefs and people in the business. And so I think that it's a really special honor for them because they're nominated by people who are their peers. There are popular awards like the Zagat Award is a popular award of the diners who vote and that kind of thing. I mean, it's obviously a different type of award, but that's what it is. But the people who vote, the 400 judges of the Beard Awards, are people who've won Beard Awards. They are members of the Who's Who of Food and Beverage. They are press and journalists and people who really are people who the winners respect. I don't know how else to say it.
Everybody's thrilled when they get these awards. But I have to say that we've been doing this for a long time. And this year, there's something special. And I'm not sure there's some big difference. What is it?
With the awards or the ceremony or the whole thing?
The whole thing, the spirit of it, the procedures, the ceremony.
We've worked very hard with some new people, with our new venue here at Avery Fisher Hall at Lincoln Center, which just kicks everything up a notch because so many wonderful things have happened in this physical space. It's the home of the New York Philharmonic. It's really an honor, I think, to be here in this beautiful thing. And I think that last year was our first year and people didn't quite know what to expect. And this year everyone knew what a glamorous and lovely affair it was going to be. And so I think they've all kicked it up a notch with Kim Cattrall on stage and her spectacular metallic clanking dress. Yeah, it was wonderful. The red carpet, I think everyone knew that there were going to be people snapping pictures and paying attention. And so I just think it's all just elevated it. I mean, when the Beard Awards started in 1991, the goal was to elevate the culinary arts in some way. And they really did. They brought attention. People gave each other awards. They had a special party that made people feel very special. We've slowly, throughout the years, raised the bar. As out in the real world, as the bar has been risen by other things, by television, by constant food media, by blogs. I mean, the food world itself has become so pervasive and so online with other arts like the music arts of this building that I think that it's just a natural evolution to bring everything up, and people are coming up and enjoying being here. I mean, it's fun.
I knew you'd be able to explain this whole thing. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Now, we're running these recordings, the recorded interviews, not in the order, the chronological order of when we recorded it, but there is a method to our madness, giving you the overview.
There is a method to our madness?
Yes.
There's even logic behind this, I think you said off camera there. I'm not sure that's true, but Anne introduces the next guest anyway, and I think it'll become clearer.
We are starting our series of interviews now at the James Beard Awards, and we finally captured somebody we've been after for quite a long time, Bobby Flay, who is peripatetic to say the least. Bobby, thank you for talking to us.
I don't even know what that word means. Man, you confuse me right off the bat. It's my pleasure.
You move around a lot.
Okay, yep, then that's true.
What all are you doing?
What am I doing tonight? We're doing the Beard Awards, and I'm co-hosting with Kim Cattrall from Sex and the City.
And are you excited?
Oh, I'm very excited. I mean, you know, I've been a fan of her show, and I saw her movie this morning, actually. I had to make sure I did my research. I was going to be co-hosting with Kim for 3 hours. And the movie's great. Very entertaining. Very New York. Very cool. Very sexy, obviously. And, you know, beyond that, you know, I'm just running my 5 restaurants. And
I'll name the restaurants just for our listeners.
Mesa Grill in New York, Mesa Grill in the Bahamas at Paradise Island, Mesa Grill in Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, Bobby Flay Steak in Atlantic City at the Borgata Hotel, and Bar American in Midtown, New York.
And you have a new book out?
A new book called Grill It. Just hit the New York Times bestseller list, so we're really proud of it.
I can't wait to get a hold of that. Tell us about your television. You've become this great celebrity. Your wife says that if you were going to take up golf, she wouldn't talk to you.
Well, maybe she doesn't know this, but I am a golfer.
I made that up.
Oh, okay. No, I do play golf. It's the only way I can kind of relax. I love being out there. But, you know, I have a bunch of shows in the Food Network now. It's, you know, Grill It, which is a new show that's starting in July 6th. And then next Food Network Star, which I'm hosting now and I'm the lead judge of. And, of course, you know, Iron Chef America. And then my primetime show, which is Throwdown, which seems to be, you know, people seem to like it.
Throwdown, I don't know. Tell me about that.
Throwdown is where we pick a person who is really great at one thing in particular, like a food thing, something they do really well. It could be like somebody who makes the best barbecue in Kansas City, you know, it could be anything. And we tell them that we're the Food Network and we want to do a profile on them. But what we don't tell them is that while we're following them around for 3 or 4 days, I'm practicing to do exactly what they do. And then towards the end of the show, they throw a party or an event for themselves and for their friends. And then I show up and challenge them to the thing that they're an expertise in.
You love media.
Do I love media? Are you media?
Yes.
And the answer is yes.
I knew that was the answer. Thank you so much for talking to us. Anything else you want to say about?
No, I'm just looking forward to a fun night here at the James Beard Awards.
I am too. Thanks, Bobby.
My pleasure.
Well, Bobby's always fun, and so is our next guest, our next interviewee. Let's listen to...
I have been an enormous fan of Ted Allen's for I don't know how long. It initiated with Queer Eye for the Straight Guy and a brief encounter with a glass of champagne about 5 years ago. You've now moved on, Ted. We're at the Beards again, but what are you doing now?
I'm serving as a judge on Top Chef and Iron Chef, and I'm in the middle of a top secret project that gets announced tomorrow. I so wish I could tell you about it, but I have another show coming.
It's not airing for 2 weeks.
It's not? Well, let me think for a second whether I'm violating PR rules. But I want to
We won't tell.
I want to thank you for that glass of champagne at last year's James Beard Awards. One of the peculiar things about the Beard Awards is they don't have a champagne reception, and the only place you can get that is in the press room. So don't tell anybody, because that's our secret.
Now, you don't, with the new rules, do you get to give advice about the proper dining and entertaining?
Do you mean on Top Chef?
On any of your media outlets.
I spend a lot of time talking about ways to entertain, trends. And the funny thing now, someone outside on the red carpet asked me what the hot trends and ingredients are in food, and my favorite one is salt.
Oh, of course.
Salt, pink Himalayan salt, black Hawaiian salt, both for texture, for crunch, for garnish. And it's funny how something that we've taken for granted our whole lot, elemental, crucial, of course, the most crucial seasoning, the definition of seasoning, but there are so many, these different salts bring so many different flavors and colors to our food.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to a chef who said it was the hardest thing to teach as somebody who came to work for her is how you salt.
How do you salt? It's true. And on the shows that I have been fortunate enough to judge on Top Chef, under-seasoning, over-seasoning has many, many times gotten somebody kicked off the show.
Now, how did you get where you are? Because I really don't know your background. I just know I fell in love with you on Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
That's very kind of you. I guess you've kind of tapped into the fact that I describe my career as a bizarre hoax. I was writing for magazines. I got into food, more serious food, when I was an editor at Chicago Magazine, which is the restaurant bible of that city. Went on to become a contract writer for Esquire, and as I got sent out to interview chefs and review seasonal menu tastings, and I became a junior critic at Chicago Magazine, I just fell in love with the culture, the people that give us this amazing multi-sensual art. And they're also fun to be around, chefs.
How about little details about how people can catch up with you? I mean, you have a website.
Yes, I do. My website is tedallen.net, and I try... Oh, the program's starting. Good grief, they're hustling us in. I try to... keep it very current. I have a little blog there, and I try to keep it current with the events and the appearances that I'm up to. So tedallen.net is where you can find me.
I'll talk to you on it. I love it. I love you. Thank you. Oh, the secret.
The secret. Which secret?
About the new program.
The PR and legal departments at these networks are extremely harsh and mean, and I want to be careful that I don't get, oh my goodness, that I don't get my show taken away from me. But I'll tell you what, let me allow it to come out. And then we'll email or talk on the phone. Would that be okay?
That's fine. I won't get an exclusive, but that's okay. I just, that's great. Love you, dear.
You're so kind. Thanks. I love you, too. Good work.
Oh, and I think it's now time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. Would love to hear from you. The address is onthemenu@onthemenuradio.com. Give us comments, suggestions, support.
Okay.
Yeah, encouragement, I guess, is what I mean.
Encouragement. we need to be. We need to be encouraged, or rather, we need to avoid being discouraged.
Yeah.
Because it's such a hard life we lead at On the Menu Radio, as I'm sure you can tell.
Well, we're going to be talking to the winners of the Beard Awards. I mean, there's so many of them. We didn't catch up with all that many people, but we'll bring you what we had. Every year, I like to take bets on who's going to win. I would have lost my shirt half the time in this one. No, maybe I got a third of them.
Hey, there we go, listeners. Anne lost her shirt. let's all line up and take a look.
But there were some rather amazing upsets, shall we say.
Well, we thought so. I guess everybody who won looked very pleased, and everybody who didn't win tried to make the best of it, because that's what you have to do. And then you can say, as we said to a number of our very good friends, there's always next year, and there will be next year for many of them. But for some of the people that we talked to this year and other people we didn't have a chance to talk to but who won, it was obviously a great evening. All of the winners are to be congratulated, because it's a real feather in your cap to win an award in any category. The fact that some people actually managed to repeat year after year is just even more remarkable tribute to just what a contribution they make to the business.
And you can't beat the publicity value of having one of these medals.
When you're Rising Star Chef in 2007 and Best Chef in New York in 2008, you're obviously onto something pretty good. That's what David Chang's achieved in the last 2 years. I'm honestly not sure that anybody's ever had an achievement like that before. And we had the opportunity to congratulate him and ask him what's next.
David Chang, we were joking about we should change the Beard Awards to the David Chang Awards, because you are the winner every year. And you and I were talking, and you said you really weren't sure you wanted this year. Did you or didn't you?
I don't know if I should. I still don't feel that I, well, I'm thankful that I won, but I feel sort of bittersweet about it because of the immense amount of respect I have for the fellow nominees. So.
Yeah, they're all good. I mean, you're in New York and you're in that lineup that you're going to be good. But you know, you have very casual concepts, and I mean, we're personally very angry with you because we cannot get into Co., your latest restaurant. It's this very lengthy, complicated process trying to make reservations on the internet. But, you know, people looking at what you're doing today don't realize that you came out of a very lengthy process of fine dining. Your background is pretty awesome.
It's not that awesome. The reason I left is because I thought there's so many great cooks in fine dining, so that's why, you know.
Where were you before?
I worked at Kraft and Cafe Balloon, and I worked in Tokyo. But, you know, I have so much respect for the profession, and people like Wiley Dufresne and Terrence Brennan and Egan Gabriel and Mike Anthony, like all great guys. And those guys really paid the dues and paved the way for people like myself. And I just feel immensely honored. And I feel like the textbook definition of right place at the right time. So.
I mean, you might be right. I have nothing, because since I have not been able to sample your food.
Yeah, I don't know, you know. Could be the most overrated restaurant and chef in the history of America.
This guy has a good sense of humor, and he's very laid back about all these honors. But he's the hot ticket in town, listeners. And good luck if you can get in. I can't.
I know. Oh, we'd love to have you. But it's only 12 seats, and you can come to one of our other restaurants. We got a lot of great cooks and chefs, and, you know, love to have you come by.
Run through your restaurants for listeners, and how do you go on? Give us the website site, and how do you get on to get reservations?
Our newest restaurant is Momofuku Co., and we only take reservations online. It's a 12-seat restaurant. Our other restaurant is Momofuku Sambar, and that's on 13th Street and 2nd Avenue. It's a walk-in-only policy, and we have Momofuku Noodle Bar on 10th and 1st Avenue as well, and that's a walk-in only policy as well. So
unless you order this whole pig at some,
we take reservations for that. Yes.
Tell us about the pig.
Well, it's just a pork butt, and we slow roast it, and it has a variety of condiments. And again, it's one of those sort of throwaway dishes that became sort of our signature dish at a restaurant. I would never have pegged it to be one of those dishes that people would come back for. So,
well, you must be really well loved and popular for you to be sweeping the Beard Awards every year.
It's very strange and absurd.
Well, I hope to get into Co. at some point, and I hope listeners can go to one of the other restaurants because they're also very good.
We'd love to have them.
Congratulations again, David.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Now, some of these awards were really a reminder of places that we really should have gone to where we've never been. That's true of this next one. I've read so much about Radius in Boston, and congratulations to Patrick Connolly.
I've heard so many raves about this restaurant in Boston. Is it Boston or Cambridge?
It's Boston, yeah.
called Radius, although we've not been there yet. I'm not surprised that you won Best Chef Northeast. Patrick Conley, tell me where you came from.
I'm from St. Louis, Missouri, originally. I went to, I moved up to Providence, Rhode Island initially to go to culinary school and then just kind of worked up to Boston, and I've been there ever since. Yeah.
We love Boston, but it's been a while since we've been there, and we need to make a trip because you're getting all these raves. What kind of cuisine? Can you describe what you're cooking?
I think its basis is in French, but it's sort of wide open to all sorts of ingredients and different styles of cuisine. And I enjoy Japanese food quite a bit, so I incorporate that as much as I can.
You have so many great chefs in Boston. Who are your best friends?
My best friends, my best chef friend up there is William Colville. He's at the Four Seasons. He's the chef de cuisine, and then I don't know. It's a very good group of people, from Ken Oranger to Mark Orfali, the restaurant scene in Boston has improved quite a bit since I've been there.
We're on their newsletter, eBoston.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Now, were you surprised to get this? Or I mean, I thought it was a shoe-in.
Well, thank you, because I was shocked. Yeah, I'm still shocked. That was 4 minutes ago when I stood up. Shocking.
Peter always asks this, and he's not answering. What did you call your mother?
My mother was sitting right next to me, so I got to give her a kiss and give her a nice little nod when I got up there. So, yeah.
And Mama was proud.
I hope so. I think, hopefully she's not crying.
What about the rest of the awards? How do you think they're coming down?
You know what? It's moving a lot quicker than I remember last year. Last year seemed to go forever. I have a lot of friends up there on the list, and I've been cheering for them, and yeah, but, you know, they always make the right decisions, I think.
Well, aren't you kind? I'm not sure I'd even go along with that, but anyhow, I have to be opinionated. I have to play opinionated. Thank you, though. I'm glad to meet you, and I hope we get to visit you in Boston.
Likewise. I hope to see you soon.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
We've been reading a lot about our next interviewee, who has a restaurant in Boulder, Colorado, called Frasca. So I guess it wasn't a surprise to us that he won the award for Best Chef. What region is it? Best Chef Southwest. And it's definitely the kind of place that's putting dining in the Mountain States really on the map. And I can assure you that at some point on the menu is definitely going to get out there and sample this fine dining region newly emerging for ourselves. Right, sweetheart?
I hope so.
In the meantime, we had the opportunity to interview the chef at this restaurant called Frasca, and there's actually a connection to an old friend of ours from Italy, which you'll hear about in the interview.
Almost to nobody's surprise, the winner of the Best Restaurant Southwest was Lachlan McKinnon Patterson of Frasca. Hello and congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
The style of your cuisine is Friulian?
That's correct.
And we know we have mutual friends in Friuli.
We do. Walter Scarbolo, and just met Lydia Bastianich for the first time, actually, which is crazy. I know her son, Joe. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Lydia was the reason we went there, and we saw Joe's vineyard before they built the guest house.
Yeah, gosh, they're awesome.
Walter is fabulous.
He is.
And I guess you are, too. Where do you come from? Are you from the Southwest?
You know, no, I'm from Toronto originally, from Canadian. But living in the States for a while, lived in Paris for 4 years, worked at the French Laundry for a number of years, met my business partner. We moved to Boulder and opened this restaurant.
And are you astounded by this?
Absolutely. We're in Boulder, for God's sakes, you know.
So you're really very happy.
Yeah, very happy.
And that means you get to come next year and introduce somebody else.
Of course. I hope I get to introduce Ryan Hardy, because he's my favorite chef in Colorado. Yeah. Ryan Hardy from the Nell, Little Nell Mass, been awesome.
Well, we're long overdue to visit the Southwest, but you've been on our radar for a long time. What are some of your specialties?
You know, gosh, I don't really. People ask me all the time, what are my favorite thing to cook or what are our specialties? I just say that our food's really simple and really straightforward, and I don't have a favorite and I don't have a specialty. We just love what we do and, you know, try to do it every day the best we can.
But how, coming from Canada, did you decide you were going to cook Friulian cuisine?
Good question. I actually said to Lydia, she said, there he is, Mr. Friuli. I said, not quite, you know. We're trying to do the best we can. We're big shoes to fill.
Now, I got a very convoluted answer to my question when we were in Friuli at Walter's place. What does frasca really mean?
Good question. Well, he should be able to tell you better than I can, but really frasca is a historic dining experience in Friuli, Italy, where people used to hang a branch over the portal of their front door or over a mailbox on a country road, and people driving through the countryside would know they could pull in for local family's farm cuisine. If it was on their pasture or property, they served it. And, of course, those have, you know, turned into other things. But Walter's actually started that way, and now it's a full-fledged restaurant. But that was the history behind it. And they're allowed to run these for a number of days and, you know, kind of keep the income in the family. And it was a great thing.
Well, I loved meeting you, and congratulations again. And I hope to see you in your restaurant.
Yeah, come see us in Boulder sometime. Thank you.
Also on our to-do, or actually to-try, or to-dine list, is a place closer to home, Citizen in Washington, D.C., and the award winner, ta-ta-ta-thumb, is Eric Siebold.
Yeah, you've been talking about us going there for years.
I've never seen such great press.
Now we'll be hard to get a reservation.
Oh, no, I don't think. I think we'll be all right.
You think he'll take care of us? I suspect he probably will. Anyway, here's the interview.
I've encountered another of my most favorite chefs and most favorite restaurants that I've not yet got to eat in, but I've read about it, and I'm so excited that Eric Siebold, a Citizen, won best restaurant, Mid-Atlantic, or best chef.
Well, thank you. It's certainly very exciting to get the award, and we couldn't be happier.
Well, of course, that's our district, and I'm real thrilled that you showed up on that. You come out of a very interesting background. You're not even from Mid-Atlantic at all, and you worked at French Laundry.
No, I'm from Iowa originally. But, you know, one of the things, I lived in Washington in the early 90s, and one of the things that I really love about the city is that Washington is a small city with sort of a you know, international spin to it, or a small city with a big city feel. And I like the fact that, you know, certain times of year it quiets down and it's very quiet. Yet there's a global focus, you know, so you get sort of the best of both worlds, in my opinion.
Your menu, what's it like?
Our menu changes, you know, once a month, and it sort of, you know, has evolved as our restaurants, you know, evolved. So I think that, you know, this time of year when it's, my God, what was it, 98 degrees outside today with 104% humidity, right now the food tends to be very fresh, you know, a little bit lighter, so people can eat a little bit more and not be miserable. You know, we want them to have a good time.
Is your background French training and contemporary American?
Yeah, my background is French training. But, you know, growing up in Iowa, you know, we do modern American food. And when everybody always asks me, I always say, you know, yes, I'm American. You know, I'm like fourth or fifth generation American. And I think we do a lot of, you know, contemporary takes on food that people can have an emotional attachment to and understand and, you know, sort of know about. But it's a little more refined.
Like pig?
Yeah, absolutely. You better believe it. We get our pigs from these people in Pennsylvania, and they do an amazing, amazing job.
Oh, where?
Path Valley, actually, which is in, it's an Amish community, outside of Greencastle.
I'll have to look into that. You get your lamb from?
We get our lamb from Keith Martin, Elysian Fields Farm, right outside of Pittsburgh, actually.
He's good buddy. Very good buddy.
Yeah. Keith's a great guy. We've been buying lamb from him for years.
Well, congratulations to you, and I look forward to visiting your restaurant. And what's next?
What's next is I'm going to get another glass of champagne, and we're going to go probably eat something at some point tonight and enjoy the weekend.
Loved meeting you. Thanks for talking to us.
Absolutely. We look forward to seeing you. Take care.
Bye.
The category of best chefs for the Southeast was a really challenging group, and there were two restaurants from the same city. Both chefs that we interviewed recently. So when Michael Adder was up for Fig for the second time, I think he liked his chances, and we sort of thought he might be a winner too. So it was a great surprise when Hominy Grill and Chef Robert Stelling stepped up to the podium to receive the award. And we had told him we would interview him afterwards if he won the award, and sure enough, we did.
About 3 weeks ago on the Menu Radio was in Charleston, as regular listeners will know, and we met two people there. Unusually, two people from the same city were nominated for Best Chef Southeast at the James Beard Awards. So here we are, 3 weeks later, and we're sitting with one of them, and one of them was a winner. I'm going to keep it a secret for just a second because I want to introduce himself and then say how it feels.
Robert Stelling from the Hominy Grill. It feels pretty doggone good.
And is anything going to change back at Hominy Grill?
I think I'm going to have to work a little harder if that's possible. You know, there's a lot of expectations when you're a beard winner.
Okay, so you're expecting that the word will spread just a little further than the county around Charleston?
I hope so. I'm sure it'll spread much further than it does in the county of Charleston.
In fact, I guess it actually really already did, right? And you're not local to Charleston anyway.
No, I'm a Yankee. I'm from North Carolina. That's still southern, but it's definitely considered northern in South. Okay.
So it's northern, but not a Yankee. Still a Red.
Technically, no. Yeah, definitely. Don't want to belittle North Carolina's contribution to the Civil War.
This is pretty special. So you haven't called your mother yet, or you have?
I have not called my mother yet.
But when you do, what do you think she'll say?
Well, sure, she'll be very excited. And she'll say, "Oh, that's wonderful."
In that understated kind of way the mothers have, right? Now, for those people who've possibly never even been to Charleston, but certainly didn't find Hominy Grill, take a minute to explain what you're trying to do there.
I'm trying to do a neighborhood restaurant, and a restaurant that's really grounded in the place that it is, which is Charleston in the Lowcountry and the South, but also in the traditions of that in the history of that region. Really try to keep one foot there as I look where to put the other foot in the future.
Because you've created something, it seems like it's been there for 50 years, and it really hasn't been there nearly that long.
No, not nearly, but I know what you mean when it says seems like it's been there 50 years.
Yeah, but didn't you want it to make it seem like that?
Yeah, definitely. I wanted it to feel like it grew right up out of the ground, like the palm trees.
So there's a body of work well done. Lots of people who are in the acting profession never even get nominated for an Oscar. Many of them, even if they're nominated, don't win. You made it the first time, nominated and the winner. How does it feel?
It feels like a fairy tale. I fell down the rabbit hole or something. It's exciting, very exciting.
Well, again, congratulations, and the restaurant is called Hominy Grill. Do the website for us, Robert.
Thank you. It's grill.com.
Well, that was a reasonably nonstop segment of the program, wasn't it?
Yes, I think so. I've got a lot of ground covered, and that's most of the winners.
So I think we need to take a break for more reasons than are obvious, and we'll be back with you on the other side.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
We're back. Let me give you our email address one more time. That's onthemenu@onthemenuradio.com. Well, moving right along.
Are we moving right along?
We are moving right along, and we happened while we were in New York to have some other wonderful meals. And although this next interview was done at a restaurant, the group, the Danielle group, did in fact win one of the most coveted prizes at a restaurant that we tried. It's Rising Star Chef for Gavin Kaysen of Cafe Boulou. Oh, actually, we didn't go there. We went to Bar Boulou.
Yeah, we had been at Cafe Boulou before, and in fact, curiously, the chef who was at Cafe Boulou left somewhere between about 6 and 9 months ago to head off somewhere else. I've honestly forgotten where he went. We did interview him. It was a fine kitchen. I'm sure it continues to be a fine kitchen.
Oh, with Danielle in charge. I mean, his group is so wonderful.
And if the chef wins Rising Star Chef, which he did, what's his name of Gavin?
Gavin Kaysen.
If Gavin Kaysen can win Rising Star Chef, having only recently taken over the kitchen at Cafe Boulou, you know he must be up to something special. So we're going to have to go back there and try that. But there was one part of the Danielle Empire recently opened, in fact, at around about New Year's Eve last year.
It was New Year's Eve.
Called Bar Boulou, which is...
Babaloo.
Babaloo.
You
have to be careful how you pronounce it. And it's a realization...
Arnaz, Babaloo.
It's a realization of Chef Daniel Boulou's feeling for the kind of dining establishment that ought to be in New York and that he'd like to have. that Barbelou has a brasserie style and specializing in charcuterie is a restaurant that he thought would be very successful in New York based on the experience that we had there of how busy it was when we got there at 1:30 in the afternoon. It certainly looks like a busy place. The interesting thing is that it's almost exactly across the street from where we were on Sunday evening for the James Beard Awards. I suspect that if the Baloo after party had been at Barbelou, we might have been tempted to cross the street and spend some more time with just an absolutely terrific group of guys and gals who run the Daniel Baloo organization, all of its parts. But back to Barbelou, as we mentioned just a moment ago, it was a place that we knew that we had to try. So we spent a long and leisurely Saturday brunch time at this restaurant. After that, we had the opportunity to talk to the chef.
And later,
since wine is a big feature of the restaurant as well, we also talked wines with the sommelier. So it was a really fun experience and relived for us in our interview with the chef.
On the menu, as everybody who listens regularly to the show knows, is totally in love with Chef Daniel Baloo and all of his restaurants. And we just came to the most recent one in New York City, only to encounter the executive chef, who happens to be a Pittsburgh guy who is an old friend. And we're talking now about executive chef Damian Sansonetti. Hello, Damian.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having me today.
Well, now you've come a long way here. I mean, you're born and bred in Pittsburgh. Then you went to Pennsylvania Culinary, and then it's a fluke. You ended up with the Myriad Group and then with Baloo. Tell us a little bit about this. How did you do this? And here you are, of Italian descent, American born and bred in a very, very French restaurant. Just talk to us about it.
Well, it's quite a good story. I started out my culinary career with Myriad. Kind of didn't know really who they were at the time, you know, out of culinary school. But I ended up working with a lot of very good people, good managers, good chefs, great cooks. And when you have good people around you, it makes yourself better. And I worked with Drew and Michael for Myriad for quite a few years at quite a few of their restaurants. And eventually it led me to New York City. And through working in New York City, I kind of encountered Danielle. And we kind of became friends. And at one point in time, I love Danielle's passion about food and for service and everything he embodied, and I wanted to be a part of that. And I got my chance at DB Bistro and became his sous chef there for a few years. And then when the time was right, I went to Restaurant Danielle. I was the banquet chef there and then the sous chef as well. And then Danielle came to me one day, and they offered me the chance to be the executive chef at Barbelou, and I jumped right on top of that one.
Well, as they say, you've earned your chops. I guess that's what you say. But this is a very extraordinary place. Describe a little bit how this place functions.
Well, the restaurant's quite large. We have about 100 to 110 seats. We have booths and freestanding tables. We have a very large communal table, seats 21. And it's great because it brings a lot of vibrance, a lot of energy into the room. A lot of people can talk back and forth and, you know, communicate, and they get to talk with up around the communal table. You can see all of the charcuterie that we make in-house on display. And then we also have two cooks up here that cut it, know how to prepare it, what's in it. And the guests get to interact with them, and they give them little taste, little slice here and there, and they get to talk to them and find out why, how, and when, and all the ingredients into it. So they're informed with all the, you know, kind of tools and everything to converse with the guests. And it's something for the guests, too. And then we also have, which is a very unique thing, in the back of the restaurant, it's a circular table. It's a tasting table. We use it for special wine events, wine dinners. It's easy access for our sommeliers to pour wine. And it's like a kind of another cool thing. It's like a communal table as well.
Yeah, and you have this wonderful rack where they hang the wine glasses. It's very cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's something unique. And people come in and they like request, oh, I want the tasting table. I want that right back there. I don't want to sit in the booth. I don't want to sit anywhere else. Just give me a tasting table. And it's pretty cool because, I mean, it's like kind of like Knights of the Round Table kind of thing or something. And you get to sit around this round table and peer across the way at other people and, you know, talk and everything. So it's kind of like almost being at home a little bit, or being family. It's not like going to a, you know, a stiff restaurant, or, you know, you have to act a certain way. You can come here and you can have a great time, have fun, have some really good food too.
Now, we had, of course, this degustation of charcuterie, which was fabulous. I mean, but you also have a chef, Sylvain Gaston?
Yeah, Sylvain, he's our chef charcutier. This restaurant has been in the works for quite some time. And Daniel kind of, he always wanted to do a restaurant like this. So, I mean, he really loves charcuterie. But the problem is that it's kind of a dying art. But in the past few years, you kind of could see that, you know, the, like, charcuterie and, you know, sausage making and all this stuff was kind of starting to gain, like, kind of a comeback. But more or less on the Italian side of things, you know, with the salumis and everything. But nobody really started doing the French stuff yet.
Well, tell us about this collaboration with Gilles Verreau.
Well, Danielle encountered Gilles Verreau a few years ago in Paris, where Gilles now has two boutiques there. And he's, it's in the family. I don't know if he's a second or third generation, charcutier. He's kind of what Danielle likes too, because he's steeped in tradition. Danielle likes traditional things, but he also likes new and inventive things as well. But he thinks if you have something that's steeped in tradition, you can, that's like a building block for you. You know, it's not, you're not going to go too crazy, too out there, because it still has to taste good, look good, you know, satisfy the guest.
We did the range. We had the, grandpas and the grandmas, and we had the, I mean, I guess it was grandpère, grandmère, and we had the head cheese, and we had the, what was the one that we had, rabbit, we had duck, it was wonderful.
Yeah, all the charcuterie is awesome. I mean, Sylvain does a great job, and Sylvain was, in essence, Gilles' sous chef over in Paris, and Sylvain came over here last year with us, moved over with his wife. He's great. He's very, meticulous. We took a long time to, find and source out the most, like the finest ingredients. We work with Heritage Farms and a couple of small farmers, in the tri-state area to get our ingredients. And we do the same thing for the rest of the menu, in the restaurant.
Now tell us about that. What are some of your special things that you do?
Well, we have quite a large menu, and once you, have your fill of charcuterie, then, you know, we kind of can move along onto a couple of other things. One of our, kind of our house specialties is our coq au vin. It's a very traditional dish, but we also make it so it's a little livelier, a little lighter in idea, because we cook all everything together, but me being Italian, I put pasta on the dish, you know, so usually you would serve it with some kind of a noodle though, but like a longer noodle, or sometimes a spatzel or something of some kind of starch, or a rice maybe. But I put like a nice little hand-turned noodle onto it, almost like a garganelli, and pristine glazed pearl onions, beautiful white button mushrooms, and smoked lardons of bacon. So it's visually it looks lighter, and it also tastes lighter, and it's not, and the broth and the juice is also lighter. So it's something you can eat, you can enjoy almost year-round.
Well, I mean, I had the salmon, which was wonderful with the let's see, where are we with it? We had eggplant, caviar, broccoli rabe, piquillo peppers, and the Marconi almonds.
Yeah, the Marconi almonds.
Marconi almonds. And then Peter had, we were absolutely blown away by the Boudin Blanc, which was with truffles and served with mashed potatoes with also some pickled apple. I mean, it was the lightest, most ethereal thing we've ever had with Boudin.
The Boudin, it's very light and fluffy. I mean, it's something that most people aren't used to, because the way that we make it here, I mean, it's almost like a little pillow or like a sausage marshmallow in a way. I mean, it's just very, very light and fluffy, but it's got a lot of flavor into it. I mean, it starts with the raw ingredients too. I mean, we have used nice truffles. We have beautiful, beautiful, excellent quality pork. And I mean, also, I mean, the freshness of the ingredients too. I mean, the thing, like, we have to always serve only the freshest ingredients and stuff like that. It's not something that you're going to see, very often, because it's something that requires great skill.
Well, anybody coming to Manhattan, anybody who's familiar with this wonderful, I mean, I call it an empire, but I mean, it's, what would you describe it as? The Danielle Empire. He's such a marvelous man, and every single restaurant has its own characteristic. What do you think, besides the charcuterie, which is, of course, the outstanding thing here, what else would you say that distinguishes this singular restaurant from all the others?
We have a good energy of our restaurant. We make our menu is very broad, so we have something that, you know, a lot of people can relate to, because we do a lot of traditional dishes, or dishes that are, you know, steeped in the tradition, but are updated and kind of modern. So no matter where you're from, I mean, we have a lot of foreign visitors that come here, and they kind of come here and they see, oh, well, you know, this is so-and-so, but it's a little different than what they're used to. It's not as traditional. Maybe they expect it and they enjoy it. Maybe it's a little lighter. Maybe it's with our local ingredients that we have here, and it will taste a little differently to them. And our desserts are awesome. The beautiful selection of coupe glacés and tarts, all baked fresh all throughout the day. Our pastry chef, Gaia, is amazing.
Yeah, well, we resisted that and had the cheese platter instead. But anyhow, listeners, do come. The email address is... the website.
Website is... you can find us on www.daniellemyc.com, and then there's a little link right there to Barbalude on the right-hand side.
I keep wondering if somebody was not channeling Desi Arnaz with this Barbalude. That's just silly, isn't it?
Oh, no. Not at all.
Love reconnecting with you. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you for having me.
One of the very special things about Barbalude is the attention given to the design and then the execution of the wine program. So we just had to catch up with a sommelier, and it's really curious. We spent our lunchtime talking to sommelier Chris, and we were going to interview with him, and then all of a sudden his boss, whose name is Steve, came in for the day. So since he was firsthand involved in actually putting together the program together with David Jonas, we thought naturally that we ought to talk to him. But we should note that we had excellent wine service from Chris during the time we were there at lunch. I think you'll find the section coming up about how the wine list is organized to be a very, very interesting one.
A wonderful part of the experience of dining at Barbalude is a very wittily put together wine program that was put together by David Jonas and Stephen Meyer. And Stephen, the sommelier here, is talking to us right now. Stephen, welcome to the program. Tell us about how and why this program was put together and then how people can use it.
Well, thank you very much, and it's great to be here with you as well. The wine program is really meant to be very accessible and open to everyone that comes in with all levels of experience and knowledge in the wine world. As we were putting this wine list together and this project together, we really felt it was very important to make the list very accessible for people and to really wanted to provide a list that allowed people to, you know, provoke a thought-provoking conversation between the different categories. So primarily what we've done is the list is based on, it's Burgundy and Rhone. It's probably two-thirds of the list is based on the wines of Burgundy and Rhone, which is an homage to the food here at Barbalude and some of the great wines of that region. We've taken those particular regions, Burgundy and the Rhone Valley, and we've split them into three categories. Découvertes, or discoveries. Then we have Les Classiques, or the classics, and Les Légendes, or the legends. And very simply stated, the discoveries are little off appellations, regions that you might not be as familiar with. The classics would be very classic regions in Burgundy, for white Burgundy, Poligny-Montrachet, Chasson-Montrachet, Mercel. And then the legends are exactly as this term states, very legendary wines, benchmark expressions from a particular wine, a particular domain, and a particular vintage as well.
So you can go all the way from a $10 glass of Découvert to a $5,000 bottle of Legend?
You can indeed. We have some, the Découvert certainly represents some great values on the list. Starting around $24 for a bottle. And then, as you mentioned, you can get 79 Ramonet Le Montrachet for $4,200 a bottle. So,
boy, that sounds like a bargain. I mean, it's a little less than $5,000. You have two other interesting components on your list. One called Cousin, Le Cousin, and then the other called Du Coeur. Explain those, if you would, Stephen.
Certainly. The Cousin categories represent those same varietals that you find in Burgundy or the Rhone Valley, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Syrah, Grenache, Mourvèdre, those same exact varietals, but in other places, other parts of the world. So we could have Oregon Pinot Noir, California Chardonnay, Spanish Grenache, Australian Shiraz. And as you mentioned, we call these categories Les Cousins or the Cousins, which I think is kind of a cute little term for it. Then additionally, we have a final section called Coup de Coeur, which roughly translates to heartthrob. And these are wines we love from some other region, some other part of the world that don't necessarily fit into one of our other categories. And it could be anything from Gruner Veltliner in Austria to Tempranillo in Spain, or perhaps a bottle or two of Cabernet or Bordeaux as well.
So the story, listeners, is when you come to Barbaloo, you come hungry, but you also come thirsty, right, Stephen?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
We're going to be taking a detour in the course of this program into a product discussion, but we are retaining the connection, the Pittsburgh connection.
Just in case you missed it, Damian Samsonetti was born and raised here and still has a lot of friends in the local community. In fact, we should say hi to a friend, Chef Patrick McFarlane, who worked with Damien in New York, but they, in a sense, fellow Pittsburghers, in that they spent time in kitchens here as well. But we're going just about as far away as the North Hills to a new confectionery and snack category product from a really interesting little company called Amanda Rico. And we'll actually be seeing them at the Fancy Food Show in New York upcoming. And I actually ran across them doing a demonstration and a handout of their product at our Whole Foods market the other day, too. So, but let's just go to the, let's go to this interesting interview to conclude the program.
We're talking to Stephanie Santoso, who has a very interesting product. Her company is called Amanda Rico, which means what, Stephanie?
It means peaceful spirit in Sanskrit, actually. So,
did I pronounce it correctly?
Yeah, the company, it's Amanda Rico.
Mm-hmm. Amanda Rico, okay. And you have a fascinating background. I mean, your whole family history is interesting.
Our family background is pretty diverse, I guess you could say. I was born here in the U.S., but both my mother and my father are they're Indonesian, and I'm Indonesian, of course, but they grew up in Indonesia. Our family originally, though, several generations back, is from southern China, so we have a bit of the Chinese influence as well as Indonesian, and then because Indonesia was under the Dutch occupation for several hundred years, we have that influence as well.
Now, do these wonderful delicacies that you sent us that we sampled so deliciously, are they part of that tradition, or did you invent them?
Actually, it was of our own invention. My mom is a self-taught baker and cook, and so she, growing up, was very influenced by a mixture of cuisines from China and Indonesia and Dutch, as you probably know, their pastries are very, very good as well. They're delicious. And so those were all influences, but the actual recipe and the actual cookie are something that my mom and I came up with together.
And call them cupolas.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They look a little bit like a cupola, but a cupola is a sort of a different thing. So perhaps you can let us know how you came up with this delicious name.
Sure. Well, we were looking for a name for the cookie, and we just, because there was no cookie out there quite like it, we didn't exactly know what to call it. And my mom and I both have an appreciation for architecture, and we like to travel, and we knew that some of the world's most beautiful buildings, just historical buildings, have the cupolas on top, just the domes that sit atop the U.S. Capitol building or the Taj Mahal. And we thought that the cookies we were in the kitchen one day and we thought that they had such a stark resemblance when we were actually making them, when we were making the cookies from the batter, based on the batter. And we thought, the name just sort of rolls off the tongue and there's alliteration there and
yeah. It's
simple and easy to remember.
Well, now, why don't you explain exactly what they are? Because they're rather unusual, I think, is a fair way to describe them.
Well, they're two things. The cupola cookies and the cupola clouds, one sweet and the other savory.
Yes.
Could you explain more? They sort of melt in your mouth.
Sure, they're very light. Our We decided that when my mom and I started this our business, that we wanted to specialize in all natural, healthy baked goods. So we wanted to keep all of our baked goods as healthy as possible. And the Kubla cookies are made primarily out of egg whites and garbanzo bean flour. We found that garbanzo bean flour is just really high in protein and high in fiber, and it makes a great base for a cookie. The cookies...
How did you figure that out?
You know, we did a lot of experimenting in the kitchen. I guess we're sort of... I don't know if we would call ourselves scientists, or probably not scientists, but we do like to experiment in the kitchen like a scientist, I guess, would like to experiment in the lab. But I think we, you know, honestly, I think we stumbled across garbanzo bean flour in probably the aisle of Whole Foods or another health food store. And we just decided to try it out and see if, you know, it could be used in, you know, in our existing recipes. And then once we did that, we decided we would try and come up with a new recipe to, you know, factor in the garbanzo bean flour, just because it was so healthy and it has a really great flavor.
Yeah, you have in the sweet, the cookies, you have chocolate cashew, espresso walnut, and chai pistachio. And then in the clouds, you have smoked Gouda and Parmesan pink peppercorn.
But there's a point we're not quite getting across. I think these are sort of like little pillows. They're like little baby meringues, right? Because they have egg white in them and they fluff up nicely so that they, they're further weight in your hand. And then they sort of explode with flavor in your mouth when you suck on them, just like a meringue.
Exactly. They're very light, and they go great with they're created to be eaten with coffee, tea, or a really nice glass of wine. And you're right, when you bite into one, they're sort of crispy on the outside, and I guess the longer you sort of eat it, it sort of it kind of dissolves. It's they're very light. They're not too filling, but they're really full of flavor.
And they're only 9 calories a piece.
Mm-hmm. They're 11 calories a piece. 11. For that.
Yeah, you're thinking about Mary's Gone Crackers. They're not.
They're very good, by the way. I love Mary's Gone Crackers.
You like Mary's Gone Crackers?
They're delicious. They're really good.
We interviewed her in the program. She's a cool lady.
They're pretty addictive, I have to admit.
So you're really into little snacks and things, huh?
I think just right now, there's such a return back to, you know, eating things that taste great, but that are, you know, healthy for you. And there's a lot out there if you just sort of take the time to look through the store aisles, you know, your local health food store or Whole Foods. And
now, could I ask a question? Is it natural for you and your mother to work together on this, setting up this company? But how do you, you've been taking your products around to fancy food shows. It's a huge jump from just doing something in your kitchen to having this online store selling all natural baked goods.
Sure. Well, I think we're trying to do it gradually, but it is, there's definitely, what we've learned is there is a pretty, you know, there's a pretty big learning curve there. We've really tried to use a lot of the resources, that are made available, to small businesses, especially, food producers. We've been, working with, several, consultants with the Small Business Development Center.
Okay.
At the University of Pittsburgh, and they've been wonderful about helping us sort of chart out a path for our business strategy. It can get overwhelming at times, but it's a lot of fun, and it's been so rewarding, and it's to see people really take to your product and to really enjoy it. I don't think there's anything that could be as rewarding as that. I mean, to know that you're providing something nourishing and something good that somebody can really enjoy it's just really a pleasure.
Well, this is a great story. Now, let's give our listeners the really important information, which is how you lay your hands on some of these wonderful little pillows of wonderful flavor.
Mm-hmm, sure. Sure. You could actually go to our website. It's www.amandariko.com, and we do sell both the Kubla cookies and the Kubla clouds through our online store. And we also on our website have a list of our current retailers that carry our products. We're currently in 7 states, so primarily in Pennsylvania, but also Connecticut, Virginia, Massachusetts, Maryland, and California, and New York as well. So we're carried in a variety of specialty food stores and health food stores and coffee shops.
Well, this is a wonderful story. Thank you so much for joining us. And listeners, line up and get some of these. I mean, they're delicious taste treat. They're only 11 calories each, and they go with a glass of wine too. So what could possibly be wrong with all of this? And of course, earlier in the day, you can have it with coffee.
That's Stephanie. We look forward to seeing you at the Fancy Food Show in New York.
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much.
Thank you, dear. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, I think that we call that in the trade a wrap.
Do we call it a wrap? And
we do.
Yeah, and we hope we'll see you same time, same place next week.
Bye-bye.